a podium or something. That was last night. This morning they had other things prepared. They gave me a table. It was about this high. I finally took my shoes off, and I spoke without any shoes on. But anyway, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for a wonderful reception. I feel right at home already. And a wonderful meal. A meal like that in Spain, afterwards, we would take a siesta. So don't you dare do that. Because if I can't, you can't. But thank you. It's great to be here. I'm looking forward to tomorrow night. I'll be sharing tomorrow night about my family as we start the service. Tomorrow night, I'll tell you about them and all my kiddos and what they're doing and where they're going to go as missionaries. And then we're going to talk about birthing tomorrow night. But men, come on out, because it's not birthing babies. It's birthing churches, although they're like babies. But so come on out to hear about the birthing of the churches in Spain. And then Tuesday night, you'll get to hear Tim. You get to hear about Germany. Then Wednesday night, you'll share again, and I get to have a good time with the children downstairs. So I'm looking forward to a good week together with you. And it's already started off great. I want to start by reading some verses in Psalms 105. If you have it, fine. If not, you can just listen as I read. Psalm 105, verses 1 through 5. This is what these verses say. Give thanks to the Lord. Call on His name. Make known among the nations what He has done. Sing to Him. Sing praise to Him. Tell of all His wonderful acts. Glory in His holy name. Let the hearts of those who seek the Lord rejoice. Look to the Lord in His strength. Seek His face always. Remember the wonders and miracles that He has done. And I like those verses to start off a mission conference with, because I think that's what the mission week is all about. It's all about telling of His wonderful acts. It's remembering the wonders and miracles that He has done and is doing around the world. So, come on out. Make plans to try to be here. I know that you work and you have all these other things going on, but do your best to come. Because if you don't come, you might miss something that God wants you to hear. And if you don't come, I'll miss you. Because I want to get to know you. I got to know several of you tonight, and so many of you have lived in my country. That's beautiful. And so I want to get to know more of you and spend more time with you. So please, try to come out and hear what God wants you to hear. And you know, missions is all about a message. The message of salvation to the world. And my prayer and my desire for you is that you will have embraced that message. Embrace the cross. You know, God gives generously, and He works wonderfully, and He blesses bountifully. And He does all of that through people like you. People who are willing to be His instruments of grace. And that's the question that maybe you will need to answer this week. Am I willing? Are you willing to be His instrument of grace? Years ago, a nurse out in Texas was willing to be His instrument of grace, and this is her story. There was a gangster going through Texas on a train, got halfway through the state, jumped off the train, obviously wanting to escape, on his way to prison, jumped off the train, rolled down a hill, fell in a ditch, hurt his ankle, couldn't walk. So someone found him, took him to a nearby hospital. And while he was in that hospital, a nurse shared her testimony with him. She shared the gospel with him. He became a Christian. He went on, served his prison term. And when he got out, he felt called to go to Cuba, just to tell his testimony of what God had done in his life. So he got out a map of Cuba, looked at it, chose an area where the gospel had never been preached. got himself a few Bibles in Spanish, got a translator, got kind of a tent type thing just to hang over because of the sun, and headed off to Cuba. And he got to this little town, this area where the gospel had never been preached, set everything up. Now, in this town, there was, apart from the families there, there were five young guys, late teenagers, older teenagers, guys, that were troublemakers. They had formed a gang. There were five of them. And they were the ones that would go around and kind of bother everybody, kind of steal everybody's things and just break things and just whatever they could do to cause problems for everybody in that town. And so these guys, when they heard about this Yankee coming to town, they had a plan. And they said, you know what? When he starts to talk, we'll just sit there right down front and we'll heckle him right out of town. He doesn't need to be here. That was their plan. So the first night, as this guy had everything set up, some of the town people came. These five young guys sat on the front row there on the ground. And he began to share what God had done in his life. You see, God had a different plan for these guys. When this guy was done speaking, these five young lads came forward to give their lives to Christ. And then the converted gangster, took off, went on to the next town. Left them one Bible. They never heard of him again. So with this one Bible, they'd get together every night under a tree. One of them would open it and read. Then he'd say, I think this means that. And he would preach to the other four. Then he would give the Bible to one of them. They would take it home. The next night, then the other one would open it and preach to the other four. And they did that night after night. And while they were doing that, they began to talk to God. They didn't know what prayer was. They just talked to God. And they said, you know, God, could you send someone to teach us? Could you send someone to train us? We're hungry for more. We want to know more. While they were praying that up in Canada, God was preparing the heart of a man to go to Cuba as a missionary. He got out a map of Cuba, chose an area where the gospel had never been preached, the same area. 2 months later, he was in that town to share the gospel. And to his surprise, there were five young lads that came forward and said, sir, did God send you to us to teach us and to train us? He was amazed. He said, yes. With those five young lads, the Bible Institute was formed that is still going strong today. Castro has never closed it down. He's closed others down, but not that one. And those five young lads became men of God, and they went throughout the whole country of Cuba leading hundreds to the Lord and starting churches. Aren't you glad someone told them about Jesus? I am. Because you see, years later, one of those five young lads became my father-in-law. You see? Became my father-in-law. You see, God used a word out in Texas to transform lives in Cuba and eventually in Spain. And this man married, and he and his wife and their son Joel were sent out from Cuba as missionaries to Miami, to here to America, to work among the refugees. My husband became an MK, but here to America. And years later, in God's timing, he called Joel to go to Spain as a missionary. You see, it all started with just a word, just someone sharing. And you know, that's the way God works. Because you share a word, and that word then goes out. And that word has no end, because there's no limit to what God can do. And you know, God doesn't expect us, doesn't expect me, doesn't expect you to share with everyone. But he does expect you, and he does expect me to share with someone. And that someone can make a big difference for God. And we've been in Spain 27 and a half years. But our pilgrimage to Spain started a little bit before that. We were a young married couple. My husband was finishing his studies at Columbia International University. And they were putting together a team one summer to go to Spain. And they were looking for 5 young people that spoke Spanish. They had 4. But I had to go along as the 5th one because I was connected to my husband. I didn't speak Spanish. But they really wanted my husband to go, so they had to take me. So I went along with this group. There were 5 of us. So we prepared for our summer missions trip. We landed in Paris. We took a train straight down to France. Got to the border with Spain in the Pyrenees Mountains. Changed trains to cross over the Pyrenees to get to our destination. The view was breathtaking. It was beautiful. We crossed over the mountains. They were green. The sky was blue. And being young people, you know, we began to joke around, you know, say things like, oh, suffering for Jesus, you know. We can handle this. Then they announced our destination. We came down off the last Pyrenees mountain, got off the train, and we were very surprised at what we saw. There was a man waiting for us. He took us to our apartment. Tiny, little, gray, grim, sad place. Because Joe and I were the married couple, we got the best room in this little apartment, which was just a little area off the living room with sliding glass doors. And it had 2 cots. That was going to be our room for the summer. Now, I quickly learned several things about this place. We learned that it was called the ugliest spot in the whole country. This place was an industrial city. You walked around in the city and all you see was smog and grime and soot. It reminded me of Pittsburgh. Years ago, remember Pittsburgh years ago? I'm from Western PA, I can say this. Pittsburgh was ugly. The soot and the chimneys with the smoke, and there was a place you could, they called it the wall, where you could almost run into the smog and the soot and the ashes. Now, I know Pittsburgh is clean now. It's beautiful. Okay, I'm glad to be here and see it clean. And they did win the Super Bowl, right? So we'll be nice to Pittsburgh. But that's what this place reminded me of. Then we learned some other things about this place. We learned that it was also called the junkyard of Europe. Of all of Europe, it was a port city. And it was the junkyard. It's where they dumped all the ships and the boats that no longer functioned. And they just leave them there. And then you could come and pick up a piece if you needed it. The junkyard of Europe. Then I learned something else about this place. I learned that it was the home of the terrorist group that we have in Spain today. They're still there. This was their headquarters. This is where they made the bombs. This is where they practiced throwing them off before they went out into the rest of the country. And I can remember we'd walk out and there were men with machine guns on every single corner. And the missionary that was there, he'd say, you know, do me a favor. We're going to go in the car. We're going to go around the curve up here. He said, there'll be a roadblock. He said, they'll come to the windows with their machine guns and they'll stick them into the car. He said, do me a favor. Keep your hands up where they can see them. Put them on the windows. Put them on the dashboard. Let them see your hands. Don't reach into your purse. Don't reach into your pocket. Because if you do, they'll probably fire into the car and they'll kill all of us. And I thought, no problem. I'll keep my hands up all summer. And sure enough, we come around the curve and there they were. They came over and stuck their guns into the car. We kept our hands up. And I began to think, you know, what are we doing here? Another thing that we learned about this place, and we learned this very quickly, was that you don't drink the water. And you didn't eat all the food that was out in the bars and the cafe places. Because we did. And we became deathly sick. My husband was the worst. He got a bad case of worms. He was so sick, all he did was throw up, lost like 25 pounds. I was sick, but I was the best sick of the 5, or whatever you say that. And I can remember in this apartment, we would line up at this little tiny one bathroom in this apartment. One would go in and throw up and flush the toilet, come back out and get in line again. We were so sick. But you know, God protected me because I found out later I was pregnant with our first child. I didn't know it then. But God took care of that little baby. But there we were in this country. And I remember the missionary said, he said, you know, Franco's still alive. We don't have a lot of religious freedom, very little. He said, I'm going to explain some things to you because we have to be really careful what we do. You see, Franco had closed down all of the big churches. They had gone underground. The little churches, the little tiny groups, he kind of let them go. And I think he figured that they would just kind of flake out on their own. You know, get discouraged when you're 5 or 10 people. You see, dictators always have the tendency to underestimate the power of God. And so this missionary had this little tiny group of 5, 10 people. But he said, you see, we're not allowed to go out and share our faith. He said, so I prepared this little literature. He said, on the back I have stamped the name of the street and the number of the little meeting place that I'm allowed to rent. But it's not on a main street. It's on a back side street where hardly anybody can find it anyway. Can't put a name up that says Bible or church or anything like that. But the number, because every place has their number. The number's there. They'll find it. But he said, I have this literature prepared. But he said, we're not allowed to hand it out. So he said, this is what we do. We go to the parks and we just kind of sit around. Go to different parks. We'll sit around. Then when you stand up, you just leave it laying on the park bench. And then we'll pray that someone comes along and reads it. He said, we can stuff mailboxes. But he said, just don't get caught. Because then we'll go to jail. And I thought, well, we don't want that. Then he said, you know, we'll have our first meeting tonight. He said, we're not allowed to have over 20 people. Not that we'll ever even get close. But he said, you know, the government is watching us. And he said, sometimes they'll filter in. And they'll just see what we're saying and what we're doing. So he said, we have to be very careful. So he says, you know what? He said, Nancy, you don't speak Spanish. So you stand in the back of this little tiny meeting place. And you count. And when we get close to 20, if we do get close to 20, you be the first one to step out. So there would be one less. And then they would do that accordingly. But he said, since you don't speak Spanish, you be the first one to do that. And I remember thinking to myself at night, you know, I really don't want to go out and take a walk around the block. There's men out there with machine guns. I don't really want to do this. And I can remember this summer, 8 weeks we were there. And I can remember going home to my little cot every night and crying myself to sleep. And saying, God, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. I said, this is a God-forsaken land. I don't want to be here. And I complained to my poor sick husband. And I'd say, you know what? I'm going to die here. I'm going to die in this God-forsaken land, and I don't want to die here. I'm going to walk out someday, and I'm going to get shot. And if that doesn't work, the food and the water is going to kill me. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to walk out, and this heavy smog that hangs over this ugly place is going to swallow me up, and you'll never see me again. And my poor sick husband would listen to me night after night after night, crying myself to sleep and complaining. Well, about halfway through the summer, I had a bright idea. Sounded good to me. So in my little cot one night, crying myself to sleep, I said, you know, God, I'll make you a promise. I said, God, if you just get me out of this country, I'll love you forever. I promise. And you see, that sounded pretty good to me. I'll love you forever. I promise. A couple nights later, as I was laying in my cot again, I said, you know, maybe that wasn't good enough. Maybe I should have taken it a step further. And so I did. I said, you know, God, you just get me out of this country, and I'll go wherever you want me to go. And I'll serve you wherever you want me to serve you. I promise. Don't ever do that. Now, you have to understand what was on my agenda, you see. Spain was not on my agenda. And when I was making that promise to God, I had in my mind the country of Switzerland. I was laying in my bed, and I was thinking, surely God would send me to Switzerland. You know, and I pictured the White Alps, the green grass. And I thought, you know, surely you can drink the water and eat the food over there. And I kind of envisioned myself kind of like Heidi skipping through the Alps, you know, telling people about Jesus. Spain was not on my agenda. Well, obviously, we made it through that very difficult summer. Got back to America. I was so happy to be back in this country. I was so happy to be back in my spot, in my bed. But you know, an interesting thing happened to me. I'd go to bed at night, but I couldn't sleep. And I would toss and turn, and I would dream. And when I dreamed, all I saw were Spaniards. And I saw these sad, long faces. People walking the streets, the faces of some of the Spaniards that I'd been with. And I saw people that had no hope. And every night I go to bed and I dream and I would see and I'd wake up and I'd toss and turn. Night after night after night. And after a couple months, I surrendered. And I said, okay, God, I'll go back to Spain. Now, I didn't tell my husband that. Because, you see, he's still very sick with worms. He's still getting over worms. How am I going to tell him we're going to go back to Spain? So I didn't tell him. God was doing the very same thing in his heart. And he'd go to bed at night and he would dream and he'd see the faces of Spaniards walking those streets with no hope because they didn't know Jesus as their Savior. And he was struggling in the same way. And after a couple months, he did the same thing. He surrendered to God to go back to Spain. But he didn't want to tell me. Because I was pregnant with our first child and he wanted it to be a happy experience. So we didn't talk about Spain. Well, he got well and our beautiful daughter was born. And one day he said to me, he says, sit down, we got to talk. He says, I have a burden. He said, I can't let it go anymore. He said, we need to talk. And he said, you know, Nancy, he says, I feel God is calling us back to Spain. And I broke down and wept. And I wept and I wept. He came over to me and he hugged me and he said, oh, honey, honey, honey. He said, look at it this way. It can't be any worse than it's already been. It can only get better. And I laughed. I said, no, I'm not crying because of that. I'm crying because that's what God has been saying to me. 2 years later, we were back there. Been back there ever since and have loved it. And you know, it's interesting how God turns things around, isn't it, when we're willing. Because you see, now I do want to die there. You see, I do want to die there. Because I want to give my life for these people and for this country. And you know, the changes that we have seen in Spain since 1978 have been astonishing, as you can imagine. We've seen it go from a dictatorship to a democracy. From political bondage to political freedom. And yet this freedom has not brought about the so desired ingathering of Spaniards to Christ. Spain prides itself on being a religious country. And yet in 1996, based on a survey taken of 19 nations, Spain was voted the most sinful. Isn't that interesting? A country that prides itself on being a religious country. And yet at the same time voted the most sinful. And that should be a reminder to all of us that religion doesn't change a person. Only a personal relationship with Jesus Christ can do that. Spain is a spiritually needy country. And yet it's so disguised by tradition and religion. And that's what makes it a hard country. I've been told that, according to missions, Spain is now considered the fifth hardest country in the world to evangelize. That's interesting. It's not because it's a hard country to get into. I believe that that's based on the response of the people. It's not a responsive country. It's a hard country. But you know, God is breaking through that hardness because there's nothing too difficult for Him. There's nothing difficult, impossible for God. I want to share the testimony of a famous singer in Spain. Around 10 to 12, 15 years ago, he became an evangelical, became a believer. And they published his testimony in the newspaper. Big article. And I believe that they did it because they thought it would make him look bad. You see? But because becoming an evangelical to them is not good. And I believe that they thought it would hurt him. But I know that God has used his testimony to touch many people, his fans. Famous singer. This is his testimony. It's written in the form of an interview, questions and answers. This is what it says. Listen carefully. It says, "My name is Manzanita, and I am 44 years old. I was born in Madrid, but now I live in southern Spain. I married and have 7 children. Now I am a Christian, and I belong to the Evangelical Church." Question. "But sir, haven't you always been a Christian?" "No way. Well, I was a religious person. But 10 years ago, I became a practicing believer. I found what I had been searching for, and I became a member of the Evangelical Church." "Why? You weren't happy before?" "Well, I was a successful singer. I had a fantastic wife, beautiful children, but there was something inside of me that just wasn't functioning. I was empty and without peace. Some friends of mine started sharing their faith with me. So I went into the church, knelt down, and I said, 'Lord, I'm going to start coming here. If you want something from me, if you can use me, then show me. I'm yours.'" Question. "And what happened?" "Oh, I began to feel Jesus in my heart. My spiritual life changed completely, and also my scale of values." "In what ways have you changed?" "Well, you see, I have always enjoyed women, and I know that I've hurt my wife by being with other women, but that's all over now. Because of my love for God and my love for her, I am no longer an adulterer. I've also stopped smoking, stopped getting drunk, stopped taking drugs, and stopped picking fights with everyone to cross my path." That's quite a life for a religious person, isn't it? "That's all over now." "Okay. Does all of this show up now in your new music?" "Oh, yes. Because when you're well spiritually, it shows. Christ teaches us another way. And if he can change me, he can change anyone." Listen to that last part again. "When you are well spiritually, it shows. Christ teaches us another way. And if he can change me, he can change anyone." What a story of God's grace. God's amazing grace. Hudson Taylor once said this. He said, "There are 3 stages in the work of God. 3 stages. Impossible, difficult, and done." I like that. Impossible, difficult, and done. Well, in Spain, we've seen the work go from impossible to difficult. And so we're encouraged. We're encouraged. But it's not done yet. It's far from done. Because there are many more cities, towns, and people like Manzanita that still haven't heard the gospel. People who need to know this. They need to know that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, is the breath of life within us, the fountain that refreshes us. He is the grace that frees us, the truth that renews our minds. He is the way that guides our steps, the love that fills our hearts, and he is the fullness that gives us joy. They need to know that. Let's be the ones to tell them.